This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for being with us today. This week, after more than 7 years of vowing to repeal and replace Obamacare, Republican leaders once again came up short. Several weeks ago, it was Plan A, repeal and replace. Then this week, Plan B, repeal and replace with more money. That failed. And yesterday, Plan C, repeal Obamacare with no replacement and push lawmakers to the table to find a new agreement over the next 2 years. That idea survived for only a couple of hours before too many GOP senators said they're not voting for it. Republican senators meet with the president today at the White House. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell says he'll keep trying with more votes next week, but as of now, he cannot get 50 Republicans to agree on what to do about health care. Meanwhile, the president is convinced that the Affordable Care Act will fall apart under its own weight.
Let Obamacare fail, and then everybody's going to have to come together and fix it and come up with a new plan, and a plan that's really good for the people with much lower premiums, much lower costs, and much better protection. I've been saying that, Mike, I think you'll agree, for a long time. Let Obamacare fail. It'll be a lot easier.
A big question now, would the ACA fail if it were left alone? If repeal doesn't have the votes, where is the ACA working? Where does it need fixing? And is there any place where Republicans who've staked their political lives on repeal could join with Democrats to repair it? Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is one of the people who knows the Affordable Care Act best because he helped write it with the Obama administration. He's also advised President Trump and Republicans on alternatives, and he's author of the new book, Prescription for the Future. It's all about the future of healthcare in America. Dr. Emanuel, welcome.
Great to be here.
You watched over the last month in the Senate along with the rest of us. Now, we know that conservatives wanted more repeal. We know moderates wanted to protect Medicaid. And as I just mentioned, the whole effort fell apart three times. But from way back here, from a perch way back from the Senate and from Washington, and the last 7 years of Republicans attacking Obamacare, what's been happening? What's going on? And why can't Republicans pass repeal?
The Affordable Care Act is doing well. There's still been some problems with it, as everyone knows, problems with the exchanges that need some attention, that doesn't need radical surgery. It needs a sort of three or four very focused reforms that would actually help the exchanges, reforms such as we need to guarantee these so-called cost-sharing subsidies, payments to families making less than $70,000 that help them pay the deductible and the co-payments on their insurance. We need risk corridors that were in the original Affordable Care Act, that is, payments to insurance companies if they get too many sick people. Marco Rubio pulled those out after the exchanges had started, and it upset the insurance companies. Those two changes alone would bring premiums down in most of the exchanges. We could use some better targeted advertising, strict enforcement of the mandate. And finally, a new idea created by the Center for American Progress would be, well, if an insurance company goes into one of those counties that doesn't have a lot of insurance companies or no insurance companies in the exchange, maybe they get tax relief from the Affordable Care Act's taxes on insurance companies to provide a kind of financial incentive for them to go into rural counties and other places that don't have many insurance offerings. Those kind of reforms, all very doable. I think Lamar Alexander is going to get to them. Those would actually enhance the exchanges, and again, make the Affordable Care Act work even better.
So the president now says that the best bet is just to let Obamacare fail, watch it falter, and then politicians everywhere will clamor to the table to solve the crisis. That's his plan. There's one or two Republicans in Congress who agree with that. What does do nothing look like from the reality of the ACA, let's say over the next 2 years? The term death spiral gets thrown around, but the reality of the ACA looks like what 2 years from now if nothing's done?
Well, partly there's no such thing as doing nothing. You know, in healthcare, you're constantly doing things, and the Department of Health and Human Services is constantly having to make rules regarding the health insurance marketplace, actually putting out and operating the exchanges. One of the consequences of President Trump's statement that he wants to see the exchanges fail is if they do fail, it's his fault. He's in control of HHS. His secretary, Price, is in control. They actually operate most of the exchanges in the country. They own it if it fails. And the American public is not going to blame President Obama. They're going to blame this administration and the Republicans. They are making choices day to day that affect the exchanges. If there is a death spiral, and let's remind your listeners, a death spiral means that only sick people buy insurance, driving up the premiums. Healthy people decide not to buy insurance. Premiums go up even more, and eventually you basically have no insurance. People are simply paying their health care bills. If that happens, that's a direct result of decisions made by the Secretary of Health and Human Services and this administration.
Let's talk about people's premiums and more broadly their out-of-pocket costs, because people pay more than just premiums. They pay deductibles. They pay other forms of cost sharing. One problem with the Affordable Care Act is premiums are rising in a lot of places more quickly than people thought they would. That'll happen, you know, when a bunch of sick people who used to be locked out of insurance suddenly have it, but that's where we are. The Obama administration really fell short in getting enough younger, healthier people to sign up for the price of what was on offer. And if they stay away, it's more expensive for everyone else and premiums go up. How important is that, and what can be done now realistically to get more of those younger, cheaper, healthier people into the pool?
I don't mean to be disrespectful, but there are a lot of assumptions you put in there that are factually not true.
Okay.
Today, premiums in the exchanges are exactly the place that the Congressional Budget Office said they would be. They started out lower than projected, and they came higher. And one of the reasons, a main reason they came up, is the fact that Marco Rubio in the Senate pulled and reversed a policy we had in the Affordable Care Act to give the insurance companies risk orders and reinsurance so that if they got too many sick people, they would be compensated for that. Marco Rubio took that compensation away. And when you take that compensation away, the insurance companies need to protect themselves from that risk of having too many sick people, and they raise their premiums. Put that back, and you can see premiums come down 7 to 10%. Guarantee the cost-sharing subsidies. As I mentioned before, these are payments to families to help them with the deductibles in the exchanges. You'll see premiums come down again because insurance companies won't be liable for those premiums. Tell the insurance companies we're going to vigorously enforce the mandate so they can be assured that more young and healthy people are going to come in. Again, that brings premiums down. I think we should take out a lot more targeted advertising. You know, Google knows what people's income is. Google knows whether they have health insurance or not. You could target people with ads saying, you know, you can get health insurance on your state exchange for the following amount of money with a subsidy. That will help too.
You mentioned the cost sharing reductions that are embedded in the ACA. This is tens of billions of dollars that go to insurance companies to offset some of the costs under Obamacare. What does it mean to the industry when the president threatens to withhold those payments, when members of Congress threaten to withhold them, or when members of Congress say they're not going to let that money go unless there's broader reform? That's what John Cornyn said yesterday.
Yeah. So first of all, we probably made a mistake in the drafting of the Affordable Care Act and not putting those in and guaranteeing their funding. And there is a question about their funding. It's the subject of a lawsuit. The House of Representatives sued the Obama administration and now the Trump administration about those subsidies. Both the Trump administration and Congress asked the judge to not make the case go forward. The cost-sharing subsidies are continuing, although there's uncertainty about them because of statements like that by Senator Cornyn. One of the consequences of that kind of uncertainty, those kind of statements that we're not funding it, is that insurance companies, again, to reduce their risk of losing money, jack up premiums to cover the costs of those subsidies, which they're liable for. You want to reduce premiums? One of the easiest things to do is say, oh, those cost-sharing subsidies, we're just going to build it into the budget, and we're not going to argue about it year to year. We're not going to make them uncertain. We're going to actually smooth out this business. I think that actually is going to happen. The only way we wouldn't get agreement is if the Republican leadership doesn't permit a vote on it, because if you permitted a vote on it today, it would pass overwhelmingly with both Democrats and Republicans coming to agreement.
Dr. Zeke Emanuel, you know, one of the most remarkable things for me over the last several months of this debate has been Medicaid. You know, if you had told me 5 years ago that in a Republican world and a Republican Congress, repeal efforts would fail because too many Republican senators say, don't touch Medicaid. Don't let the Medicaid expansion go away. My state needs it, and I'm not going to let you touch it. I would have thought you were crazy. But Medicaid, this massive program for low-income people, largely low-income working people, has not only survived this fight, but has survived in a way that says, don't go after it for years to come. It's pretty remarkable.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was in the same place you were, which is, well, you know, Medicaid's at best a second best solution. It's never anyone's first choice. Andy Slavitt, who headed CMS, the part of the government that oversees Medicaid, told me when he came in to the job, he was most skeptical about Medicaid. And when he left the job, he was most impressed with Medicaid and how it was helping working Americans. It's hard for state senators and governors to say, you know, let's cut those people off and deny them insurance. Hospitals depend upon it. Doctors depend upon it. Pharmacies depend upon it. And those people, to continue working and to continue to be healthy, depend upon it. That seems to be a system that's working. And again, I'm as surprised as you that Medicaid would suddenly be the cornerstone of the healthcare reform and something some Republican senators would come to defend.
Let's leave this on politics before I let you go, Dr. Emanuel. Is the fever broken now, do you think, having watched the last month and a half in the Senate? Is the idea of full repeal dead and Republicans will come to some conclusion that they have to fix Obamacare? Or do you think that this continues?
No, this doesn't continue. I don't think anyone can take much more of this. This is, people get exhausted in Washington by things. And we've had now it's almost exactly, I think tomorrow is exactly 6 months of the administration. And I think people are like, no more. I do think some things are going to have to be done to shore up the exchanges. The question is whether we could come to a broader approach that really does address the affordability problem, which is the primary concern of most Americans, affordability. And I think, again, as I've said, and I've been saying this for months and months and months, there are bipartisan policies that you can adopt. And I do think that going forward, that's where the focus should be. Without the drama, without a lot of rigmarole, let's be just much more businesslike. We don't need to talk behind closed doors. We can actually have hearings. We can do it via the usual legislative process. I've often joked that, you take three or four politicians and policy experts from the left and three or four from the right, you lock them up in Camp David until they come up with a policy. They'll come up with a policy pretty quickly that they can agree on.
Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is one of the architects of Obamacare. He's advised Republicans, too, and he's author of Prescription for the Future. Dr. Emanuel, thanks for being here.
Great to be with you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.